In the fall each year we all congregate, the vows all gathered at the church of Hillgate. The scriptures reading from the book of Mormon, our favorite verse, my God, a freshman. Drunk and obnoxious, well, Georgia fame ain't nothing finer in the land. Now the 3,000 of our best friends, it's Saturday in Las Vegas.
Welcome to the Saturday in Athens podcast. We're a Georgia Bulldogs show by dogs fans for dogs fans. I'm your host, Herschel Gurley, here as always with my co-host, Boss Dog. And Boss, special episode today. We have UGA athletics historian Jason Hasty back with us, who we love chatting with. He's just the best. Knows more about Georgia. Well, he's probably forgotten more Georgia history than I know about on the whole. Like, he's just an encyclopedia of Georgia athletics knowledge. So love talking with him. And speaking of, you know, vintage and historical marks, this past weekend was Big New Saturday by Home Field Apparel. And we had obviously be giving you a little bit of a sneak peek of what the release was going to be. And now that everybody's seen it, based on the sales, it seemed like everybody agreed with me and Boss that the choices were pretty electric. What did you think of following all the Big New Saturday on Twitter and everything? Did you keep track of the sales as they were going? I thought it was cool to kind of see the sales going up and down and seeing which schools Georgia was taking down over the course of the day.
No, I thought it was great. I especially loved, you know, the fan interaction as we passed certain schools and we took over second place and took over Notre Dame. Everybody's like, oh, this isn't the first time went into Indiana and beat Notre Dame or something like that. Like, it was just, it was all the comments were great. So unfortunately, we didn't get the Gators, but it is what it is. We'll get them on the field. It's apparel, guys. So, but I mean, still, it was a hefty chunk of apparel that was sold on Saturday. Less nothing to bat an eye at.
Yeah, it was a strong showing by the Dogs faithful in their effort to win the world's largest T-shirt party, I guess you could call it. So, yeah, I thought that was fun to watch. And to your point, yeah, I thought it was funny to see some of the other fan bases pipe in. And somebody said, oh, there should be a Final Four of T-shirt sales. And you should release shirts from all four schools and then see which one comes out on top on, like, one day.
I like that.
Yeah, because the Notre Dame fans were like, this wasn't nearly as popular when our weekend went. And, like, I just thought all that stuff was funny. So, if you guys haven't already, make sure and head over to homefieldapparel.com. Check out their Georgia selection. There's some great stuff on there. I was rocking the Georgia golf shirt that they released, the golfing dog, which is just a phenomenal design. So go on their site and check everything out. When you get to check out, if you are a first-time Home Field Apparel user, you can see Saturday in Athens at checkout, and you will get yourself 15% discount on whatever your Home Field Apparel haul is. So go and give them a look again, homefieldapparel.com, and go grab all the vintage Georgia gear your heart desires. So Jason had some interesting takes, I thought, on some stories that I had either only heard kind of topical things about, or he fleshed out some things that I had really never heard before at all. And the genesis of this conversation was when we went into town for Topgolf at Sanford. I took my brother and my wife and my sister over to see Jason, and he was kind enough to pull out, you know, gosh, man, he must have pulled out a couple carts full of stuff from the athletics archives, ranging from things all the way back in the early 1900s, all the way up to the Rose Bowl in 2018, capping off the 2017 Georgia season. And we spent probably an hour and a half with him, and Jason just went through every item with us and told us the backstory of things. And it was really an awesome, awesome day, and we had an awesome time with him. But he told a couple stories, at least gave some more nuance to them that I hadn't really heard before, which he was kind enough to come on again and share with us. And I don't want to spoil it for you because I want you to hear it from Jason, because I will undoubtedly ruin the story if I try and tell it. But, what did you think of some of the stuff he had told? Had you heard of those stories before, or was some of that new to you?
It was mostly
like you said, fleshed out. Like I'd heard snippets and the very condensed version. The one thing I did not know at all was the War Eagle chant. That was completely new to me. I had heard scuttlebutt that it had come from Georgia, but never knew the backstory behind it at all. So yeah, to hear that story fleshed out and to hear the details behind that was just, that's crazy. That's a worth the price of admission, folks, for that, you know, for that story alone. So make sure you listen to that. That's a great story. Copy us at every chance they get, just like you said. I know last year they didn't have the exhibit, and but every year the new exhibit and this year's exhibit just sounds awesome. Can't wait to get down to Athens to check it out. Definitely want to get down there a day early so I spend at least a couple hours down there just checking out the new exhibit, because it just sounds amazing. Once again, don't want to give away too much, but it really culturally relevant, and especially with 50th anniversary with what happened with the football team 50 years ago, it's really, really relevant. It'll really have an impact on everyone that goes there and sees it.
Yeah. So Jason talked about a few things with us. He talked about some of the origins of the War Eagle cry with Auburn and how they're tied into Georgia. He told us about the exhibit that he is doing this year for the UGA Athletics Archive, and it is going to be awesome. This is the 50th anniversary this fall of the integration of the Georgia football team. And what I love about it is Jason said there will be a piece of it that not only includes the Black athletes that were part of the integration of Georgia athletics, but also the individuals that were involved with the athletic program that never got an opportunity to compete or go to school there. So I just love that. And, with Jason piloting that, being kind of in the seat of making sure all that goes as it should, you know it's going to be done right. You know it's going to be done in a thoughtful manner. So I am so, so excited to see that. And he will give details on how you guys can consume that when you are in Athens for football weekend. So please make sure and do that. You bring up the War Eagle thing, and it was cool how that came up too, because like I said, he had pulled out a ton of artifacts for us. And one of the things he had pulled out was a program from, I believe it was the 1903 Georgia Auburn game. And it was, homie, like in almost mint condition. Like it was beautiful. And you know how your boy is about programs. So
yeah,
I was like living my best life during all that. So we got to kind of go through the program and see how everything looked. They had team pictures in there. And so he pointed out on the team picture and then said, I have a story I have to tell you about this. And so that's how all that went. He kind of fleshes that out during the interview. So how about Hannah Back Company? Do you know anything about that, or was that new to you?
That was completely new to me. Like, I mean, I'd heard of it, but not anywhere near. Like, I had no idea it was based anywhere in Georgia or had any backstory with UGA. Nothing. Knew nothing about that at all.
Yeah. So I had come across that because I was searching. I think I was trying to find a custom wood bat company, and I was hopeful that they had one in Athens. And Hannah popped up. And so I started kind of doing some research on it. And finally, I was like, look, I'm just going to reach out to Jason and like see what he can tell me. So he sent me an email kind of explaining stuff to me. And I was like, oh, dude, you have got to talk about this when you come on the show. So, yeah, like I said, he has forgotten more Georgia athletics history and Athens history than I could. And, you know, I could ever know myself. Like, and I feel like I am pretty good with knowing history and studying history, and Jason makes me look like I'm like still in third grade social studies. So, you know, as always, we are so thankful for Jason coming on, and we know y'all will love it. And be sure and support him, support the UGA Athletics Archive, support Hargard in any way y'all can. What a gift it is to have those things at the University of Georgia. So without further ado, here is our interview with Jason Hasty. We are excited to be joined today by our favorite Georgia athletics historian, Jason Hasty. Jason has met with us before and was kind enough to meet with us in person on UGA's campus when we were in town in June for Topgolf at Sanford. So, Jason, always great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you much. And thank you for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So first off, we just really want to say thanks for being so accommodating with us when we came in June. We had a great visit. Just to let our listeners know, Jason was nice enough to bring out some artifacts for us and kind of give myself and my brother and my sister and my wife a bit of a guided tour of Georgia athletics history. And we all had a really, really great time. So thank you so much for being so gracious and kind to us, Jason. We appreciate that.
Hey, it was my pleasure to do. I mean, what's more fun than bringing out a big cartload of Georgia athletics artifacts and spending an hour or two just going through them and talking about them? If you can do that in the middle of a work day, then you're doing pretty good, or any day, really, honestly.
Yeah, it was awesome. Plus, had a great Jason was kind of our tiebreaker on what to do for lunch that day. And we ended up going to White Tiger and getting barbecue, and it was magnificent, brother. So thank you for the gentle push on that.
Hey, always a good choice when you go to White Tiger. It's hard to go wrong there.
Yeah. So you were telling me a little bit about an exciting project that's coming up in the fall for Georgia fans to enjoy. I was wanting you to tell our listeners a little bit about that and an opportunity they're going to have during home weekends.
Yeah, absolutely. So every year, with the exception of last year because of COVID, what I do is I curate a large-scale museum exhibit about Georgia sports history, some different topic in Georgia sports history. In the past, I've looked at Georgia football during the World War II years. I've looked at Coach Dooley's life and career. I've looked at the first 25 years of Georgia football, the history of the Redcoat Band. So I try to vary it every year so that we can highlight different things for the collection, but also so that when people are in town for a game or just to come in and enjoy Athens, they can stop by the Special Elections Building to see something that they haven't seen before. And so this year it's actually a really special exhibit. It's a special anniversary this year. This is the 50th anniversary of the integration of Georgia's football team. Five men signed with Georgia in 1971. They were not allowed to play on the varsity team until 72, just because of NCAA rules at the time, which limited freshmen to the freshman team. But this is the 50th anniversary of that really historic event. And so this exhibit will look at the integration of Georgia football, really of Georgia athletics, not just football. The emphasis will be on football, but not just that. And so I'll be looking at some of the early experiences that Blacks had in intersecting with the athletic department or with Georgia sports through that time when those five men signed. We'll look at some of the athletes who maybe people don't know actually predated them. There were several athletes who actually signed and played with Georgia teams before those men played football. Maxie Foster ran with the track team in 68. Ronnie Hoag played basketball starting in 1970. And so then we'll go on to look at some of the other experiences, some of the other firsts that have taken place really up to the present day, where you have Black first or, you know, historic moments in for Black athletes and coaches in Georgia sports. And when I say to the present day, I mean, look at just last month, DJ Shockley was named the new sideline host for Georgia football games, replacing Chuck Dowdle. So he will obviously be the first Black person to be part of the broadcast team. So history is being made even to this day. And so that's really what the exhibit will look at. We'll also look at some names that some older fans might remember, Clegg Starks or Harry Squab Jones, gentlemen who were not allowed to be to participate athletically with the team or even enroll at school, but worked their whole lives for the Georgia Athletic Department, both starting in the 19-teens and Harry Squab Jones actually being associated with Georgia football until Coach Dooley retired. So for almost a century, these two men were on the sidelines with Georgia Athletics, contributing in the way that they could contribute, even though they were not allowed to, like I said, either enroll in school or be part of the athletic program. So that's going to be the overview of the exhibit. It really is just looking at some of these historic milestones, some of these experiences that, that Black athletes have had, Black coaches have had, and really celebrating their accomplishments and trying to keep those stories alive. They're such important stories. And I want to make sure that we keep those stories alive for new generations of fans who may not understand the context of what they're seeing when they see Black athletes performing with our teams today.
Well, that sounds fantastic. And I know based on the work that you always do that it'll be an excellent exhibit. So if Georgia fans are in Athens and or on campus for Dogs games in the fall, what are the ways that they can consume the exhibit, the times, all those type things?
Sure. Well, we are not, the downside of the Special Collections Library, like most buildings on campus, we are closed on football Saturdays. So you can't come in on a Saturday and see it. However, we are open during the week, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. We're actually adding some evening hours. Tuesdays and Thursdays will be open to 7 o'clock. So if you're in town and can come over after work, that'd be great. Our museum galleries are open and free to the public. You don't have to pay to get in, free to all ages, and come in and look at the exhibit to your heart's content. Certainly, if you have questions, people can contact me. I'm always happy to talk about things. On Fridays before home football games, I will Fridays at 3 p.m. before home football games, I'll be offering a free guided tour of the exhibit. It'll be about an hour. It'll be me basically just talking about some of these things. We'll have a Q&A portion for people who may have questions about some of the topics we're talking about. And it's, again, just it's free, no reservations. Just come to the second floor of the Special Collections Libraries at 3 o'clock on a Friday, and we'll give you a tour. And I will also mention that for folks who either maybe want more and more in-depth look at this topic or aren't able to get to Athens or aren't really able to get to see the exhibit, there will be a digital companion exhibit available when this opens to the public. And that will be free to everyone to use. And it will explore some of the topics a little more in-depth. It'll have a lot more photographs. Obviously, with any kind of museum exhibit, you're really limited in terms of physical space, what you can show. But through a digital exhibit, we can really go in depth more and show more things than maybe we can even the physical exhibit, which is quite substantial on its own. And the exhibit, by the way, is called Not Only For Ourselves, the Integration of UGA Athletics.
Well, I can attest from firsthand experience that all of y'all should take advantage of that when you were in town on game weekends on Friday and spend an hour with Jason learning and taking all those things in. He is a fantastic, fantastic resource. The University of Georgia and Georgia fans are lucky to have you. So everybody make sure and go out and hang out with Jason and up your knowledge a little bit on Georgia athletics history. So make sure and do that. And we'll keep tabs on that as the season gets closer, and we'll make sure and link things on our social and stuff as well. And like in our show notes, just so folks have a reference point. And speaking on that, you told us some stories when we visited with you back in June that I had not heard the depth on them that you gave. And the first one that I was hoping you could tell our listeners about was the unique historical, I guess, situation behind Auburn's famous War Eagle cry and its connections to the University of Georgia.
You know, Georgia and Auburn are connected in so many ways. It's really hard to separate the two schools, even though I think we all can agree on who's better. and people may not realize how far back this connection really goes. Of course, they were the second team we ever played in football. The first was Mercer. We were their first team ever, and we've been fighting each other like grumpy siblings ever since. So in the early days of athletics, what you see with mascots and with rallying cries and slogans is they form very organically. This was not a time when you had marketing experts, branding experts, things really weren't commercialized. And so mascots, slogans, rallying cries, it just kind of came out of nowhere, or they came out of the experiences that people had with teams. And the War Eagle cry is one of them. There was a man named Harold Ketron. Harold Ketron was a center on the Georgia team. He was our best player in that era. This was be 1903. He was our best player on that team, which was not one of our finest teams, sadly enough. But he was the best player on there. Harold Ketchman was from up near Clarksville in Habersham County in North Georgia. And his nickname was War Eagle. Oddly enough, apparently what he would do when he went in to make a tackle or when he was playing is he'd just start yelling, War Eagle, War Eagle. The story goes, and Auburn has quite a few different explanations as to where they got their War Eagle cry. The story goes that Auburn players heard him yelling War Eagle, and they liked it. So they started doing it themselves, and it really caught on with the team, and it caught on with the fan base. And so that's kind of where it can be traced back to. And the official Auburn explanations of where they got their War Eagle cry actually do acknowledge that this is a possibility. I think they're a bit loath to admit that it could be from Georgia, but I mean, come on, we've all seen the hedges around their stadium and their fight song. It's fully possible that they took it from us. But it's just one of those fun little quirks of history that, you know, the War Eagle really could have been a Georgia thing originally, and kept really just coming from that one player.
Yeah, and I was trying to think back as I was thinking about our interview today. What spawned us talking about that? Was it the program that you showed us from that same year? Is that what it was?
Yeah, in the archives, we actually have a game day program. It's our oldest game day program from the Georgia-Auburn game on Thanksgiving Day in 1903. And it has Harold Ketchman right on the cover. So that's what spawned that conversation about Ketchman and War.
Yeah, and now I'll be honest, that was one of my favorite things that you showed us, just because I think programs are such a cool thing anyways. But it was neat, and we had talked about this that day, that really, from a, I guess, digestibility perspective, The program of 1903 was not much different from the programs that we see today. It had ads from local businesses throughout Athens, had pictures of the team. I don't know. It just struck me in the similarities from the difference in 120 years, you know. I thought that was neat.
Look at that game day program. It's not much different than what you have today. Today's are fleshed out more, but the basics are there. The basic structure is there. It's like they decided really early on, this is what we want in our game day program. We want some local ads and pictures of the team. And that's kind of it. Like, everything else is extra, but that's really what they wanted.
Now, another story that you told us, which I thought was great to get some depth on, was the story of the Savage turnover pads, because you had brought out some of the pads from the Spike Squad, And it kind of interplayed with that. And it was something that was cool, I think, for all of us to hear, but especially my wife and my sister, who may not be as dug into Georgia lore as my brother and I.
Sure. And that's something with the archives. I think people hear the word archive and they think, you know, dusty old boxes filled with ancient history. And that really is not the case, especially with the Athletic Association archives. It's a vital piece of, you know, it's a vital growing archive. It's not static at all. And so new things are being added. And we're trying to, as new traditions develop, trying to document those and make sure that we have, you know, documented them appropriately and given them their due place in the historical record. And one of those new traditions is the Spike Squad. The Spike Squad dates back about 10 years. It's not a very old tradition. It's not like people in the 20s were wearing spikes on their sweaters and, you know, tweed coats or whatever they were wearing in the 20s. But it's something that grew organically. Again, you know, it's just an organic thing that grew out of a student group. And I think we, you know, Georgia fans, we all know the Spike Squad. I don't really need to talk about who they are. They're at every game pretty much and every sporting event. And they're such an iconic piece of what Georgia sports looks like now. A couple of years ago, the president of the Spike Squad, a young man named Kelby Canada, donated his Spike Squad costume to us. He was the slash figure. He had the slash, you know, top hat and curled hair, and he had, you know, he was kind of the rock and roll Spike Squad guy. And he donated those spikes to us and his hat for an exhibit we did a couple of years ago on the 2017, celebrating the 2017 season. And he was gracious enough to let us keep those for posterity. And so the reason I'm talking about this is we brought up those spikes to show you the other day. You were asking about the gold spikes, the turnover pads, the SAM spikes. And I mentioned that, and this is what Kelby had told me, and I wasn't aware of that, that the Spike Squad actually made those for the Georgia football program. The players actually approached the Spike Squad because they love the look of the Spike Squad. And they wanted a turnover prop because that was kind of the rage a few years ago.
Yep.
And so they wanted one for us. And they approached the Spike Squad on their own, had the Spike Squad made those Savage pads. And, you know, especially in that 2017 season, they became famous in such a huge part of that season for the team and for the defense. I think we all can remember, you know, Richard LeCount wearing those and, you know, celebrating on the sidelines a few times. So it's such a this emblematic part of Georgia football right now. But that, again, just grew out of a student group. It wasn't something that Nike gave to us. It wasn't something that a marketing team developed. It was something that the players on their own went to a student group to have developed.
I love that just because I think it's such a great, I think, story of synergy between the student body and the football team that represents it, right? Like, I just thought that was really cool that those two things intersected and kind of worked mm-hmm. together to make that happen. So I love that story. And I'm glad you brought that up about, I guess, the connotation around the archives and what that brings to mind for people, because I would say of, you know, at least a third of the stuff you showed us was from within the last 10 years.
Yep.
So there's a ton of cool things in there. If you're a Georgia fan or if you're just a history fan or whatever it may be, I mean, a ton of cool artifacts. I mean, we had loved seeing the gloves that Sony wore when he's doing the jazz hands, when he scored the winning touchdown against Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl, and the game ball that he was carrying when that happened, and just really, really cool artifacts. I think we saw Nick Chubb's cleats that day.
Yep, the cleats he wore in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, just a lot of really awesome artifacts. And I think, too, and you shouldn't discount this in the equation, but Jason really has a passion for it and does a great job of kind of maintaining and passing along those stories. So like I said, just a great resource that Georgia fans should take advantage of. I wanted to ask you about something that we saw that day that I meant to ask while we were there and forgot, but I saw that there were flyers that day for a baseball card exhibit. Is that still going on?
No, that's not. That's actually, that's a really neat thing, but it's not part of the Athletic Association archives. Senator Richard B. Russell, who represented Georgia in the U.S. Senate for decades, was a passionate, he was a sports fan generally, but he was a passionate baseball card collector. And in the early days, he collected baseball. When he was young, he collected baseball cards and preserved them. So oh, wow. He had, you know, a Ty Cobb, he had a Honus Wagner. He had all the great cards from that time period that collectors, you know, get so excited about. And he, when the Richard B. Russell Library was founded back in the 1970s after he passed, those baseball cards actually came into that collection. So they're stored here in our archives. They make an appearance every once in a while. They haven't made an appearance in a little while now, but every once in a while, the Russell Library will bring them out to display or to show at an event. But they are also online, I believe. You Google Richard B. Russell Library baseball cards, it'll give you some more information about that. But yeah, those are really, really neat. And to see those, you know, the 120-year-old baseball cards is always pretty awesome. So
to stay on the baseball theme, you and I had emailed back and forth about this because I was picking your brain about it, wanting to get some further depth on it. But tell us a little bit about the Hanna Baseball Bat Company.
You know, the Hanna Bat Company is a really neat piece of Athens history that has kind of been forgotten by, I think, certainly most people who don't have an interest in sports, who just don't really think about it or don't know about it. The Hanna Bat Company was founded in the 1920s. It was a company that made shovel handles and axe handles. And somebody said, well, we're making handles, we might as well make baseball bats. There's not a big difference between a handle and a baseball bat. So they started making baseball bats, and they became one of the major suppliers of bats to the major leagues and also to colleges. church league teams, softball teams. They made softball bats. And one of the kind of the features of the Hanna Bat Company is that if you had a favorite baseball star who used a Hanna Bat, you could write to them and request that they make you the same model of bat that, that player used. So, you know, I think Lou Gehrig used a Hanna Bat for a while, so I use his name. So if you like Lou Gehrig and you wanted to hit with the same bat that Lou Gehrig used, you could write and they'd make one for you. They would give you the Lou Gehrig model bat. So it was a big concern. It was a big manufacturing plant here in Athens. And it was, for those of you who are familiar with Athens, it's down kind of near where Weaver D's is now, East Broad Street, going past the building where the newspaper was headquartered for so many years.
Yeah, yeah.
So good, that end of Broad Street. So kind of in the 60s, I kind of get the sense that it started to decline. Louisville Slugger was always the number one bat manufacturer, but Hanna was right there with them for decades. And I get the sense they started to decline a bit in the 60s, and then they closed in the 70s. And one of the reasons I think that the company has really kind of fallen out of our collective memory here in Georgia or here in Athens, or for Georgia students who pass through Athens, is the building it was housed in burned to the ground. And so there's really no physical reminder of it left. It's not like the Hanna Bat Company has been turned into student apartments or something like that, or businesses or things of that nature. The building is just gone. As you might imagine, a building full of decades of wood shavings was not an easy fire to put out.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the story of Hanna Bat. It passed out of memory. Hanna bats were very well regarded. They're very nice bats. They're actually real collector's items. We're lucky to have two Hanna Batright bats. And they're also sometimes called Batright bats, B-A-T-R-I-T-E bats. And we have two of them in the archives. I don't know the provenance on them or why they're here other than they're Hanna bats. But I do know that the Georgia baseball team used them for a long, long time, as you might imagine they would with the bat company being here.
Was one of the other stories that I read that if you went there during their heyday to take a tour, each person that went to take a tour received like a mini Hanna Batright bat to take home as a souvenir?
They did. They would receive it and get a little miniature Hanna Batright bat. And they would sometimes give them out at Georgia games, which just seems like a really bad idea to arm a bunch of football fans with miniature bats.
Yeah.
In fact, there's one story that Dan McGill told for years. Dan McGill, of course, the great historian of Georgia sports, that we played LSU here in Athens in the 30s. We lost, and LSU wanted to tear down our goalposts. So our fans swarmed around the goalposts with their miniature Hanna bats to defend it. Again, I think that's probably why we don't do that now. But you can find the miniature bats probably more often than you'll see or find the regular size bats. But yeah, you could definitely get a little mini Hanna bat.
Yeah, I don't even remember how I came across it, but I saw it somewhere, and you know what I think I was doing? I was looking to see if there was a current wood bat manufacturer in Athens or the Athens area. And I saw this thing for Hanna and kind of went down the rabbit hole, and I was like, I'm going to stop all this. I'm just going to email Jason and see what he could tell me about it.
That's usually a good idea.
Yeah. So Jason gave me all this awesome facts, and it was so cool. And it did kind of make me think, like, man, that'd be neat if somebody would do like some vintage t-shirts or something that had like Hanna Bat Company on it or something like that. I just feel like there's a lot of old Athens history that could be preserved. Like, have you and I talked about the Harry Dog origin story, mascot Harry Dog?
I don't think we have. No.
So we interviewed the first, like two of the first folks we had come on and tell their Georgia story were Stan Beecham and Tom Sapp. Mm-hmm. So Stan Beecham, first person to ever wear the Harry Dog costume, and Tom Sapp, one of the designers and originators of the Harry Dog costume. And one of the coolest stories that both of them relayed was the day that they debuted it to the football team prior to the Sugar Bowl in 81. Mm-hmm. Stan goes out in the costume and Tom's there and Coach Dooley brings him out. And then after everything was over and practice was done, Tom and Stan, and I always forget this, I need to be better about my history. Tom had a co-creator with him, his business partner at the time. Mm-hmm. And the three of them went to Allen's Hamburgers and had hamburgers. And Stan apparently was still in the bottom part of the Harry Dog costume.
That might have been the ultimate Athens experience for that time. You're in the Harry Dog costume at Allen's Hamburgers.
Yeah. But so, like, you know, like Allen's is no longer there. Like, I just think there's these cool relics from Athens history that kind of aren't around anymore. And I wish that was preserved in some way, or that people could, you know, wear those things around or whatever it may be. And who knows, maybe there's zero appetite for that. But I just love the preservation of those type things, especially cultural things like that. Like, you talk about Allen's to a certain demographic of folks that are associated with Athens and with UGA. And I mean, it's immediate, you know, like people automatically cling onto that and tell you their Allen's story or whatever it may be. So I don't know. I love stuff like that.
Well, and you know, you're right. You know, the Hanabat name, like I said, is just kind of fallen completely out of currency. It's not something people really think about anymore. There's so much Athens history out there. And Athens has always been, because of the university, it's always been something of a transient community. People come in for 4 years and they love it. And then they go away and they may visit, but they're kind of revisiting, like with Allen's, or, you know, they're visiting, or the Grill or places like that. They're revisiting their old haunts. They're not really trying to explore new parts of Athens history that they don't know much about. But one thing that is good here, and you know, we do, aside from the Athletic Association archives, we do have a huge collection of Athens materials, as you might imagine, photographs and documents, letters, whatever you need. So a lot of that is preserved here, but there is so much to explore. I mean, Athens is an old town. People don't really think about how old the city of Athens is. You know, it dates back to around 1800, or in that time period. The exact founding date slipped my mind, but it is a very old city here in Georgia, and people don't really explore that. They tend to cling to what their experience was during their school years. And I know because I went to school here as well, and if I had moved on, that would be my situation as well, to really think about Blue Sky Coffee or Jittery Joe's or some of those places that existed when I was in school in the 90s.
Yeah, I just think it's such a neat thing. And I love those type of things, as evidenced by how much I'm always picking your brain about different topics and stuff as it pertains to Georgia history. But I just think those are neat stories. It would be cool, and I guess it speaks to it, that you said the building itself burned down. I would assume that any type of plans, like bat plans or bat sketches and things that the company may have had, probably went the wayside when all that happened, because it'd be neat to have some of that or to be able to see some of that. Because to your point, from what I had read too, they were pretty prevalent in their heyday. Like, they were a legitimate competitor for Louisville Slugger. Big time, big league names were using their bats all out of little old Athens, Georgia, which I just think is such a neat piece of that history.
Yeah, it's not like a little company here in town that we wanted to be big time. It wasn't. It was a big name company. It was very well known in sporting goods circles. Major league players use their bats. Colleges use their bats. They were a big deal. And unfortunately, I really don't know much about where the plans went to. I don't know if they survived. Maybe they were lost in the fire. I genuinely don't know what's happened to their records, which is a shame. I would love to hold them here, of course. And I think that it would be a really neat piece of Athens history to preserve. But yeah, sometimes you just don't know. Maybe one day they'll show up. You know, hopefully one day they will, but as of right now, I don't know where they are.
So I want to close with you today by just getting kind of a pulse of the campus vibe from you. Fall practice has started back up. I'm sure the students are trickling back into Athens to get the fall semester started. Just tell me what the buzz is like in Athens as you and I are talking 24 days from kick. I think it's going to be an electric season this year. A lot of anticipation, a lot of expectation. What's the feel in the Classic City? What's the feel around campus?
Well, as always, my huge caveat, it's probably better to ask me what the feeling was going to 1946 than to ask me what the feeling was in 2021. I think that everyone I've spoken to, and as you might imagine, just because of what I do, people tend to like to talk to me about sports and the dogs. Because I, you know, in addition to being my job, I am a Georgia fan, a lifelong Georgia fan. So I think the feeling's good. like everyone I've talked to has been really super positive. I think there's a good vibe on campus. I think it's just a really positive, a positive vibe. I think everyone looks at the team. It's a wonderful roster. I mean, yeah. You look at the talent that, that Coach Smart has accumulated, and it has to be top to bottom one of the most talented rosters we've ever had on campus. And that goes back, you know, a long way. And the Herschel teams were great. Some of the teams that Rick had were stocked. Some of the teams that Coach Butts had were stocked. You know, you look at 46, it was a stocked team. Then 42, you had Cinquich and Trippy.
Right.
So I think in comparison with that, yeah, this team has a great roster. So I think the sky's the limit. And I think I'm expecting great things. And hopefully we'll see that borne out in the fall. It'd be nice to have another title here.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I the thing that strikes me is it seems that there is a really good leadership group intact. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those kind of intangibles that can't be measured or rated or whatever it may be by all the experts. But I think that's there in spades for this team. They just seem to like each other and they seem to get along. And that seems to be fostered by the guys who are in leadership positions, whether it's Karis Jackson or JT Daniels or Jordan Davis or whoever it may be. There just seem to be a lot of good guys in that leadership room. And I think that's going to matter. And I think that was part of that 2017 run, was you had a group of guys who were really strong leaders, a lot of respect from their teammates, and kind of took that burden away from the coaching staff. I think those are always the teams that kind of separate themselves. So yeah, we are like just chomping at the bit. So excited. We got our tickets to the opener. So we'll be in Charlotte for the Duke's Mayo Classic. I am so excited. My brother lives in Charlotte, so okay. We had free lodging. So
that's great.
Yeah. You can't beat that. Right.
No, I'm sure hotel rooms would be like a little scarce that weekend, even in Charlotte.
Yeah. Well, so it's holiday weekend too. Right. So you're kind of, it's double whammy. So I think it's going to be wild. And you got two obviously fervent fan bases coming together to meet in a driving distance neutral site. So well, I think it'll be great.
It's such an old rivalry.
Yeah.
Just a bitter rivalry for so long. If you look at the games in the 80s, those were just heavyweight bouts every year. But the rivalry itself, I mean, the campuses are close together.
Yep.
And it's a natural rivalry. I will say there was one kind of neat little story to throw in there. In the early 20th century, one of the matchups in the earliest years of the 20th century, Georgia players and Clemson players made a bet on the outcome of the game, which obviously wouldn't fly now. But the loser had to provide the winner with, I forget how many bushels of apples. Apparently, those were in demand. So Clemson lost, and they had to give our players, I forget how many bushels of apples. It might be the most wholesome sports bet of all time.
That's right.
maybe that's a good rivalry trophy, the East Coast Apple Cup.
Oh yeah, I like that. Oh, I could definitely get on board with that. Yeah, I was gonna tell you there's an artist who does kind of Georgia based artwork now. Dave Helwig, are you familiar with his work at all?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we met Dave down at the Jacksonville Bulldog Club's tailgate at the cocktail party, and he had all his stuff out. And I mean, I just think he does neat stuff. And so he's done a couple sketches for this game with Clemson's Tiger mascot all mocked up and all this kind of stuff. And one where, kind of a ferocious looking hairy dog is holding the tiger tail in his mouth and all this stuff. I don't know. I love stuff like that and the excitement about that. I got one more question for you, because with everything swirling around and all the changes with Texas and OU coming to the SEC and the aftershocks of that with where schools might shift with this new realignment puzzle. I know probably for you, like me, it just pains the historian in you and the sentimentalist that loves the history and regionalism of college football. But I guess, what are your thoughts on all of that? And do you think, I guess no different than it was when Mizzou and A&M joined the conference, that we'll still be able to maintain some of those, you know, decades long traditions from the Southeastern Conference that are beloved by so many?
Sure. You know, and I will say right at the outset, I mean, this is the past 3-4 months have been arguably the most historic period in term in college athletics. From the NIL laws coming online to the Supreme Court ruling on amateurism to this kind of seismic realignment, there really hasn't been a period in college sports that has seen this much change this rapidly. The only period you could really compare it to would be to 1906, when the NCAA was really getting formed and there was the movement to reform college football because it had become so rough and so deadly.
Yep.
That, however, was really just a rules change. It was not a fundamental shift in the definition of college athletics like we've seen now. So for me, from a historical perspective, this summer has been incredibly exciting to see these events unfold. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what the ramifications will be down the line. In terms of Texas and OU, I think any college fan could see that maybe we were in for another round of realignment. Conference expansion or consolidation, some form of that, certainly with some of the, like I said, some of the shifts in amateurism and NIL laws coming online. I as a fan, I'm really excited about Texas and OU coming in. They're true blue bloods in college history.
They really are.
And not just in football. They have great athletic programs across the board. And even though we've talked a lot about football today and some about baseball, but, you know, we really document all college sports here.
Yep.
So that is huge. Plus, you know, games again. I mean, Georgia and Oklahoma have only played at the Rose Bowl. You know, that's the only time in our history we played. That, I think, will be a great rivalry going forward. Georgia-Texas, you know, you have the similarity between Austin and Athens, so often compared to each other. Again, great schools, similar traditions. So from that perspective, I think it's exciting. And I think that one of the things that has really defined the SEC is its ability to maintain its identity even when changing. If you look at the SEC, you know, Suwannee, one of the founding members, dropped out in 1940. That was not a big move. Suwannee was kind of an odd fit even in 40. Then you had Tech and Tulane drop out in the mid-60s. The identity of the SEC doesn't really change that much. With the addition of Arkansas and South Carolina, you know, it's a natural that South Carolina would be in here. Arkansas was a great fit when you're looking at the western part of the SEC. But kind of the fundamental identity of the SEC didn't change. When A&M and Missouri came in, again, you don't really see that commitment to excellence that the SEC has maintained through the years change. You don't see those traditional rivalries change. And there seems to be, I would say there's an understanding that what makes the SEC special are these rivalries, these centuries-long rivalries. So I don't think that that's going to be as big of an issue going forward, because I think the SEC understands that and understands that's what makes it special and understands what makes it such a great conference and what keeps fans coming back year after year after year. If you get rid of Georgia-Auburn, you will lose something of the identity of the SEC.
Yeah, I think that's my only concern. Is that if we get too big and they can't figure out a scheduling structure that maintains the games that we all want and need to see, right? Like there have been, I saw some models which were talking about, well, Georgia may have to give up playing Tennessee every year. They may have to play every other year. And stuff like that for me would be a non-starter. I just think there's too much there. You can't just say, oh yeah, they'll just play every other year. Like they got to figure all that out. I think that's going to be a vital part for the conference office to figure out how to maintain those historical annual rivalries, because I think that's the fabric of the conference and the fabric of the fan base.
I agree totally. And that's, like I said, it's what keeps fans coming back year after year, generation after generation. It's what really makes college athletics special. You pass along these stories through your fan base, through your family, through your tailgating, you know, family, year after year after year, generation after generation. And that's what makes it special. And that's what really differentiates it from pro sports, where you see so much change in the teams every year.
Yep.
Teams move. You know, we're not going to pick up and move to Austin, Texas, you know, just because the conference is expanding like a pro team might. But I do think that is something that they will need to address. And there are plenty of people I'm sure they have working on it who have make a lot more money than me working on that.
And me too, brother. Yeah.
But I'm sure that, you know, that's something that will be a big issue for them. And I don't see Georgia wanting to move away from a yearly matchup with Auburn, or Alabama wanting to move away from a yearly matchup with Tennessee. It's just too ingrained in the traditions of those schools. Tennessee fans at the moment may want to move away from Alabama just because of, you know, how the schools are at the moment. But that wasn't always the case. There were many times when Tennessee was on the top of that rivalry. And I think that it's an issue if we do lose those. I do think that would be a real blow to the spirit of college athletics, not just in the SEC, but across the country.
Yeah, it's going to be extremely interesting to see how it plays out. I think it's one of those things we'll have to mark and watch. I mean, to your point, what a transitional period this last quarter year has been with all the things that are happening. So
you add on top of it, the 2020.
Right, and all exactly.
We had to go through there.
Exactly. So it's an ever-changing world, even in college athletics. So. Mm-hmm. Well, Jason, we are always so appreciative of you spending time with us, and we certainly appreciate you sharing your knowledge and expertise with us. As we've always told you, you're always welcome to hang with us.
Hey, I'm always glad to be on with you guys. I really do appreciate you having me on and letting me ramble on about stories from 100 years ago. That always makes me feel.
Well, man, we are really excited to see the exhibit this fall too. So we'll keep tabs on that and make sure and direct people there. And we're certainly going to stop by and see you and see it in the fall when we're in town in Athens. So we will look forward to that. And in the meantime, man, go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
Hey, Georgia's better now.